Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Americans for Prosperity's Teletown Hall. We're going to be discussing the Supreme Court vacancy and the role really the courts play in the country. I'm Tim Phillips, the president of Americans for Prosperity, and thank you for joining us. We have a lot of folks coming on the line right now, thousands actually, I'm looking at the dial, from across the country and many from the great state of Texas. And that's great because our special guest tonight is United States Senator from Texas, Ted Cruz. And if you'd like to ask the senator a question in just a few minutes, we're going to go pretty quickly to kind of interactive question with you. Just press *3 on your phone, *3 on your phone. You'll go into a queue with some of our Americans for Prosperity operators, and they'll get you queued up. So do that. Just press *3. Two quick things before we go to Senator Cruz. One, most of you know Americans for Prosperity, but we've got hundreds of staff working with literally tens of thousands of volunteers across the country, from Alaska to Florida and New Hampshire to Arizona and really everywhere in between. And we've done a lot of work on this nomination, a very good nomination of Brett Kavanaugh by President Trump. Secondly, the United States Senate, you know, Senator Cruz is on the Judiciary Committee. He's played a key role in this with Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. They have been approving President Trump's judicial nominees at literally a record pace. They've got 68 confirmed judges since the president's inauguration. And recently, Leader McConnell vowed to approve 30 more before the end of the year. So this Senate, with Senator Cruz leading on Judiciary in many respects and the Majority Leader McConnell, they are literally doing more on judges than any United States Senate in the first 2 years of a presidency in American history, and we thank them for that. Now, when Senator Cruz talks about the court, he knows of what he speaks. He was Solicitor General for the state of Texas, also in private practice. He authored over 80 briefs that went before the court, and then he's actually argued before the Supreme Court at least 9 times that I know about. So he knows what he's talking about. Senator, thank you for joining us tonight. Please give us a sense of why this nomination is so important in your mind and where it stands.
Well, Tim, thank you very much, and thank you to AFP, and thank you to everyone who's joining us tonight. Thank you for taking a little bit of time away from your dinner time, away from your family, to be part of this conversation. This is a pivotal time in our nation's history. We have seen over the last 2 years, I think, in more victories for the American people, victories that included in December an historic tax cut, cutting tax on Texans and people all across this country, and producing enormous booming economic growth. But none of the victories we've seen has been more important than nominating and confirming strong constitutionalists to the federal courts. We saw Neil Gorsuch confirmed to the U.S. Supreme Court. And we are fixing to see Brett Kavanaugh confirmed the Supreme Court. We are in the middle of that battle right now. Last week, as you know, we had the confirmation hearings in the Senate Judiciary Committee. I played an active and leading role in that process, and it was an absolute circus. The Democrats were lighting their hair on fire. They're so dismayed about this nomination. Although I'll tell you, it was striking. As the hearing went forward, that several things came through. Number one, not a single Democrat made the case that Judge Kavanaugh was not qualified for the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think there's a reason for that, which is on the merits, it's impossible to make that case. Judge Kavanaugh has been a federal appellate judge for over a decade. He clerked for the United States Supreme Court himself, and he is by any measure one of the most respected federal appellate judges in the country. And so none of the Democrats even tried to make the case that he wasn't qualified for the nomination. A second observation that I think was really striking, very little of the time from the Democrats was spent even trying to make the case of criticizing or attacking Judge Kavanaugh's written opinions. He has issued over 300 published written opinions as a federal appellate judge. That's the body of work that is obviously most relevant for assessing what kind of justice he will make. And very little of the time the Democrats spend attacking him was spent on his actual record. What they did instead, they spent an enormous amount of time attacking Donald Trump and saying how much they despise Donald Trump. And I have to admit that was really, I think, a surprise. They've made that evident 2 years now. Secondly, we saw something that we've never seen in a Supreme Court confirmation hearing before. We saw protesters interrupting the hearing over and over and over again. And there have been public reports that that was a concerted strategy, that the Democratic senators had worked hand in hand with the leaders of the protesters to orchestrate that. So every minute or two, someone would yell and scream and disrupt the proceeding, and then they would be removed from the hearing room. The first day alone, we had 70 people who were arrested in the course of the hearing. And I think all of that was designed. I believe the Democrats recognize they don't have the votes to defeat Judge Kavanaugh. And so they're simply trying to demonstrate rage. They're trying to demonstrate anger because their far-left base is so incensed, so furious, so filled with hate for President Trump. I think the Senate Democrats are trying to show that they can throw a fit and make as big a stink as possible. That being said, I think judicial nominations was front and center in terms of the issues the American people voted on in November 2016, we want to see principled constitutionalists who will be faithful to the Constitution, who will protect the Bill of Rights, who will protect our fundamental liberties, free speech, religious liberty, the Second Amendment. I think that's front and center what this battle is all about. And thank you to the passion and commitment of all of the people on this call for fighting to defend the Constitution and Bill of Rights. We are delivering on that promise right now, and we're doing it with your help and your support and your encouragement. It makes a big difference.
Well, thank you, Senator Ted Cruz. Many of you are still joining from across the country and also the state of Texas. I'm Tim Phillips with Americans for Prosperity. You're on the Teletown Hall on the Supreme Court nomination and hopeful confirmation of Judge Brett Kavanaugh, and you're on with Senator Ted Cruz. And very briefly, many of you are on this call. If you are willing to let your senator know that you want to see this nomination, this Judge Brett Kavanaugh confirmed, just press 2 on your phone right now. Just press 2 on your phone. There's no charge involved, nothing like that. But even if you're from Texas and you know that your two senators are absolutely a yes vote, in fact, are leading the effort like Senator Cruz is, still do it anyway, because by pressing 2, we're able to convey to them the encouragement from folks like you. And it's good for them to know that there are so many folks back home in their states who've got their back when they're fighting a tough fight like they're fighting right now. Also, many of you are just joining. Just press *3. We've got a couple of you queued up for questions. But if you want to ask a question or make a comment, brief comment with Senator Ted Cruz, just press *3. But again, though, *3 on that. But again, though, press 2 if you're willing to let your senator know that you personally want them to vote for Judge Kavanaugh. Senator Cruz, you've given an update on the hearing, which is fascinating and helpful. You've said, though, and this is a quote, that confirming Judge Brett Kavanaugh would be, quote, a major victory for the American people. Tell us what you meant by that, because that's an interesting statement to make about a Supreme Court nominee. But tell us what you meant about that it will be a major victory for the American people to confirm Brett Kavanaugh.
Well, I think that's true both as a matter of democratic process and as a matter of substance. In 2016, in February of 2016, Justice Antonin Scalia passed away. He was one of the great jurists to ever serve on the Supreme Court, somebody I knew well, who had been truly a lion of the Constitution. That vacancy was the first vacancy on the Supreme Court during a presidential election year in decades, in many, many decades. And the 2016 election became, for many people, a referendum on the Supreme Court. Hillary Clinton, you'll recall, she promised exactly the sort of justice she would appoint. She said she would appoint liberal judicial activists who would impose her left-wing partisan agenda from the bench. She promised any justice she would appoint would vote to overturn the decision. Was a landmark decision that upheld the individual right to keep and bear arms in the Second Amendment. I had the privilege of playing a leading role helping litigate and win the Heller decision, representing 31 states before the Supreme Court defending the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. And Hillary promised her justices would take away that right. She also promised that any Justice she'd appoint would vote to overturn the Citizens United decision, dramatically undermining the First Amendment, our free speech and political speech rights. On the other hand, Donald Trump promised to nominate principled constitutionalists who would follow the law, who wouldn't legislate from the bench, who would defend our fundamental liberties. He promised to nominate judges and justices in the mold of Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas. And so the American people had before them a dramatically different choice. In fact, Donald Trump went so far as to put out a list of 21 names that he said these are the individuals from whom he would choose to replace Justice Scalia, so that the voters could look and see exactly what kind of judges he intended to appoint. And so we had, come November, I think there are millions of voters who voted because of the Supreme Court front and center. I can tell you, frankly, I'm one of those millions who the Supreme Court was a major issue on my mind when I cast my vote for Donald Trump. And that has imbued these nominees almost a super legitimacy. There has been a national referendum. I think there's a very good possibility, had Justice Scalia not passed away in 2016, Hillary Clinton might well have been elected president. I think that so many people turned out to defend the court, to defend our rights, that was a decisive factor in President Trump's election. But it means that when he follows through and nominates constitutionalists, and when the Senate follows through and confirms them, we're vindicating the decision of the American people, the decision that we had a chance to make collectively at the ballot box. I also think when we're nominating and confirming judges and justices who will follow the law and Constitution, it is protecting the fundamental liberties of all of us, whether it is free speech or religious liberty or the Second Amendment or the Tenth Amendment. But it is also respecting the democratic process. You know, one of the disturbing things about many on the left is when they can't get their radical left-wing policy decisions through the elected legislature, they can't convince the instead, what they want to do is have five unelected lawyers in Washington, D.C. decree those outcomes on everybody else. And so by preventing that, we're really winning a victory for the American people to say it is the American people who will decide the major public policy issues of the day, not five lawyers in robes sitting in Washington, D.C.
Got it. Great explanation. Well, lots of you are still joining across the country. I'm Tim Phillips with Americans for Prosperity. You're joining our Teletown Hall with Senator Ted Cruz from the great state of Texas. Thank you for joining us. Again, if you want to show your senators that you approve of the Brett Kavanaugh nomination and want them to confirm this great judge, just press 2 on your phone, 2, no charge at all to you, but what we will do is make sure that message is communicated to your individual senator. And even if you're a senator like Ted Cruz or like Senator Cornyn, both from Texas, or are both on board, still do it. It lets them know you've got their back. So, Senator, we've got the first question in the queue. Actually, it's from Clyde in Odessa, Texas. Clyde, if you're listening and still on, go right ahead with your question for Senator Ted Cruz. Clyde, are you there from Odessa, Texas? I hear some of the mysterious beeping. I'll try one more time. Clyde, are you on from Odessa, Texas, with a question for Senator Cruz? All right. Well, we've
Senator
got the
Cruz?
Clyde, can you hear me?
Yes, I have you now. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go right ahead from Odessa, Texas, with your question for Senator Cruz.
Senator Cruz, thank you for taking my question. My name is Clyde Pate. I'm a small business owner in Odessa, and my question is about the day-to-day relevance of the Supreme Court to people like me. I mean, I care more about property rights and personal freedom than identity politics, and I'm wondering how Justice Kavanaugh or another justice in his mold could improve the lives of people in West Texas and places like it.
Well, Clyde, thank you very much. We had a big town hall there, and it was great to be with the good people of Odessa. Your question is a very good one, and just about all of our rights end up going through the courts and ultimately the Supreme Court. And it's the Supreme Court that is the crossroads upholding or striking down our rights. And when it comes to property rights, as Texans, as Americans, we believe in protecting property rights. Property rights are fundamental. They're fundamental to your business. They're fundamental to your family. They're fundamental to your prosperity. They're fundamental to your job. And one example of how property rights come up in terms of the Supreme Court is a decision called Kelo, Kelo versus New London. That's a decision a few years ago that the Supreme Court decided that dealt with eminent domain, dealt with the city of New London, Connecticut, wanted to use and did use its eminent domain power to condemn the home of a woman who had lived there. Her family had lived in the home for 100 years. And the city wanted to condemn and forcibly take her home against her wishes in order to give it to a giant pharmaceutical company to build a parking lot where her home had been. And the question before the Supreme Court is whether governmental entities can use eminent domain, use the power to condemn property for private interest, for commercial interest, to use it for a private company. Everyone agrees eminent domain, that there's constitutional authority to use it for public purposes. So if the city or state is building a road or building a highway, that's the traditional area eminent domain has been used. But the question there is, could the city condemn and take away someone's home and give it to a private corporation for them to use how they wished? And unfortunately, that decision was decided 5-4 the wrong way. 5-4 saying, yes, eminent domain can be used to condemn private property and give it to a private corporation. I think that decision was wrongly decided. I think it was a decision. In fact, I recall at the time it came down, I was serving as the Solicitor General of Texas, which is the chief lawyer for the state in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. And I was actually at a conference of other state SGs. So we were all gathered together when the Kelo decision came down. And most of the other SGs were celebrating the decision. They said, isn't this great? This is a victory for government power. And I remember looking at my colleagues and saying, well, just because you can wear the jackboot doesn't mean you should. Now you want to know why the Kavanaugh appointment matters for private property rights. The Kelo decision was 5-4, and the deciding vote was Justice Kennedy. Justice Kennedy is the justice who has just retired. Brett Kavanaugh is being nominated to replace him. If Brett Kavanaugh would vote on the other side, if he would vote to protect property rights, which I very much hope he would, that would be a powerful protection of our rights. And that's true on issue after issue after issue, our basic liberties. We want justices who will protect the Bill of Rights instead of enabling government power that can take away our fundamental rights.
Thank you for that, Senator. Folks listening on the call, we still have so many of you joining from across the country and also in Texas. Thanks and welcome to the Texans joining up. I'm Tim Phillips, President of Americans for Prosperity. You're joining our Teletown Hall with our guest, Senator Ted Cruz. A couple of housekeeping items very briefly. We're going to do just a very brief poll. It will only take a moment. If you support the nomination or the confirmation, if the Supreme Court nomination was one of the top issues, perhaps the top issue for you in voting in 2016 for president, press 1 if that's yes. So if for you, when you were casting your vote for president in 2016, you heard Ted Cruz talk about that for a moment. If the Supreme Court was your top issue, please press 1. We'd love to hear it in your sense of just how important the Supreme Court was in casting your vote. Press 2 if it was not, if there were other issues that were more important to you. So we'll share the results with you of that in just a moment. 1, if the Supreme Court was your top issue in voting for president in 2016, and 2, if it was not, if there were other issues more important. Also, if you're willing to allow us to pass along to your senators, your two senators, that you support the confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh, please, at this point, press 2 on your phone. At this point, press 2. We're switching over for our operators who are handling the call. If you indeed want to share with your senators that you do support the confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh, press 2 on your phone at this point. I mentioned this earlier, but it's worth taking note of, and we're going to ask Senator Cruz to comment on this in just a moment. This United States Senate, I mentioned it earlier, it has confirmed already 68 federal judges since President Trump's inauguration. 68. Senate Leader Mitch McConnell said they're going to do 30 more this year alone, and that will already, it's already a record. This United States Senate has actually confirmed more judges than any other United States Senate in the first 2 years of a presidency in this nation's history. So that is an exciting thing that's happening. I know at Americans for Prosperity, we have made the confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh a top issue. We've done town hall meetings across the country. I've been at some of those with activists, probably some of whom are on the phone tonight. We have also reached out to Americans using telephones and door knocks. Already, Americans for Prosperity has reached just a hair over 1 million Americans across all the states about the Kavanaugh nomination, either through door-to-door knocks, through telephone calls, or through direct emails that went directly from person to person, not blast-out emails, but individually. That's over 1 million Americans our group Americans for Prosperity has reached. And I think it's one of the leading grassroots efforts on this in the entire nation. Senator Cruz will be back with us in just a moment. He stepped away to vote, actually. He is in Washington, D.C., doing his job as a United States Senator. So he stepped away for just a moment to vote. He's coming.
And Tim, I just got back. I just voted and ran back to the car.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Well, before we have another question in the queue, if it's okay. This is Steve from Cumberland, West Virginia. Steve from Cumberland, West Virginia, are you still on the line and ready to ask a question of Senator Cruz?
Yes, sir, I am.
Go right ahead.
Senator Cruz, it's a pleasure to speak with you this evening. My question briefly, sir, is I've already tried to make contact. I did make contact with my senator and asking for his support for Judge Kavanaugh. As a concerned citizen, is there anything else I can do to help move this nomination forward is my question. And I want to say God bless you, and I wish you well in the election, sir.
Well, Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and that's a very good question. Yes, there is. I think it is important that your senators hear from you, that this nomination matters, and that you want them to vote in support of Judge Kavanaugh. And you mentioned you're in West Virginia. I think your voice is particularly important. If you look at Neil Gorsuch, when we voted to confirm him, a total of 3 Democrats voted yes, and one was Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia. Another was Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota. A third was Joe Donnelly from Indiana. I think there is a realistic prospect that all 3 of them may well vote yes. I think we might well get a yes from Doug Jones, who is the new Democratic senator from Alabama. He was not in the Senate when we had Gorsuch, so he did not vote on that. So that's up to 4 potential Democrats who might vote yes. There are other Democrats who are up for election in red states, states like Montana, states like Ohio, states like Missouri, states like Florida, that I think it's beneficial for them to hear from their constituents that you want them to vote yes. Those senators, those Democrats are probably less likely to vote yes because they were willing to vote no on Gorsuch and ignore the wishes of their constituents the last time around. But I think the more that senators hear from the constituents, the more powerful it is. And I think in terms of Kavanaugh being confirmed, the first step we have to do is get at least 50 Republicans. We've got to hold our conference. If we don't get 50, I think we get 0 Democrats. In other words, if we only got 49 Republicans, I think every Democrat would vote no because they couldn't resist the opportunity to give President Trump a defeat on a matter of the magnitude of the U.S. Supreme Court. So our first task on the Republican side is make sure we get at least 50. I think we'll do that. In fact, I think we'll hold the entire Republican conference. I think we'll keep all 51. With Neil Gorsuch, we held every Republican. I think we'll do the same with Kavanaugh. Once we do that, I think it's entirely possible we get 3 or 4 Democrats as well, but it'll really come down to each of them making a decision if they're going to listen to the views of their constituents.
Senator, we often hear the term judicial activism, or legislating from the bench, and those are terms that get bandied around a lot, but they're important. Can you take a moment and give what is your definition in real-world terms of when we have these judges who are activists and who are legislating from the bench? Because a lot of activists hear those terms. Tell us what you think that actually means in real-world terms.
Well, that's a very good question, Tim, and it was one of the questions I tried to really focus on in my questioning of Judge Kavanaugh last week, is to highlight what the difference is. Judicial activism is a judge imposing his or her policy preferences from the bench. And that's true regardless of whether you agree with those policy preferences or disagree with those policy preferences. That it's a question of a judge's responsibility under the Constitution is simply to apply and follow the law, to adjudicate cases and controversies, to decide them based on the law, but not to impose whatever public policy or political outcome he or she would prefer. That takes a humility. That takes a judge willing to step back and say, if Congress has passed a law and that law is constitutional, I'm going to follow that law. I'm going to apply that law, even if I disagree with that law, even if I think that law is stupid policy, I'm going to follow it anyway. So it is judicial activism when a court strikes down a law that is constitutional. It is also judicial activism when a court refuses to follow the Constitution. So, for example, let's take the Heller case. Hillary Clinton promised to appoint justices who would overturn Heller. Now, the central question in Heller was whether the Second Amendment protects an individual right to keep and bear arms. And by a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court concluded that it does, which was, I believe, is the clearly corrected decision. Justice Scalia wrote the majority opinion. It was, in my view, the most important opinion Justice Scalia wrote during his decades on the bench. The dissent, the position of the dissenters, it's important to understand just how radical the dissenters' positions was. The position of the dissent was not that some reasonable gun control laws can be permissible. That, as a public policy matter, different people could disagree with, but that was not their position. Their position was much more extreme than that. The position of the dissenters was that the Second Amendment does not protect any individual right whatsoever, none, that it is only a, quote, collective right of the militia, which is fancy lawyer talk for a non-existent right. Because if Hillary Clinton had won, if she had appointed a justice who joined the four dissenters and became the fifth vote to overturn Heller, what that would mean is that the court would conclude the Second Amendment doesn't protect an individual right for anybody. It would mean that Congress or any individual state or any individual city could pass laws making it a crime, making it a felony for any American to own a firearm. And neither you nor I nor anyone would have an individual right to challenge that in the courts. It would effectively erase the Second Amendment from the Bill of Rights. That would be, in my view, a definition of judicial activism. It would be five judges who like gun control, who want to see gun control as the national policy, who think the fact that the Second Amendment protects an individual right is inconvenient to their policy goal, essentially ignoring the Constitution and elevating their own policy preferences over the law. That's what activism is. And for anyone who believes in democracy, you should be dismayed about judicial activism, because the way to resolve contested public policy issues is through the democratic process, not through essentially empowering judges in Washington as philosopher kings to govern and rule us all.
Got it. Well, by the way, thousands of you have responded back already on this call saying that you are willing to reach out to your senators. Again, if you just joined us within the last couple of minutes, just press 2 on your phone. Press 2 on your phone if you are willing to allow us to send a message to your senator on your behalf supporting the nomination of Judge Kavanaugh. And also, you heard Senator Cruz talking about the importance of actually calling as well and letting your senators, whether it's to a district office or to the main number in Washington, D.C., for letting them know. It matters. I know I served on Capitol Hill many years ago as a chief of staff to the current Judiciary Chairman, Bob Goodlatte, in the House, and I know members then, and they still do, keep careful tallies of how many yeses and nos via email or calls or to their Facebook or Twitter accounts they get. So please press 2 on your line now to let us know that we're allowed to do it on your behalf, but also take a moment to call. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. We have William from Alaska. I did not catch the town or city from Alaska, William, but William from Alaska is on. And William, if you're still here and have a question for Senator Cruz, go right ahead. William, are you there from Alaska? Oops, I just got a note that he just dropped off. So we'll go to Monica from Pennsylvania. Well, yes, to Monica from Pennsylvania. Let's try Monica from Pennsylvania. I didn't catch the town in Pennsylvania, Monica, but if you're there, go ahead with your question for Senator Cruz.
I'm here. Thank you very much. I'm from Somerset County, also known as America's County, and we were honored to welcome President Trump here yesterday. Thank you for taking my call, Senator Cruz. I'm a great admirer of your philosophies and your views on things. My question really kind of continues to unravel the question you answered earlier on legislating from the bench, and points specifically to Senator Ben Sasse's comment he gave to Judge Kavanaugh in the hearing. I believe you're in the room. And for any of those on the call who didn't hear his comments, basically I'll just abbreviate it. He basically explained the past 30, 40 years, the judicial branch and confirming Supreme Court justices has become more politicized because the Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives have relinquished their power and the politics has shifted over to the judicial branch, which was not the way our founding fathers originally intended it to be. So my question to you is, based on those, the enlightening and eloquent comments Ben Sasse gave, what are you as a senator going to do to try and take some of that power back and reclaim it for the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House of Representatives?
Well, Monica, thank you for that question. I appreciate that question. And you highlight a very significant and a profound shift in our country that has happened in the last 30, 40, 50 years, which is the Supreme Court steadily and increasingly seizing more and more power, policymaking power, from the American people and declaring that they themselves can decide the biggest public policy issues in the country. And, you know, there's some irony. If you go back to the days the Constitution was adopted, if you go back and read the Federalist Papers, the framers described the judiciary as the least dangerous branch. And the reason was that the authority to make the laws is vested in the United States Congress. The authority to execute the laws is vested in the president and the executive branch. And the judiciary, they described as the least dangerous branch, because it doesn't have the power to make law or execute law, but simply to apply the law and to adjudicate cases and controversies. That was the case for the first 150 years of our nation's history, but starting a few decades ago, the court began seizing more and more areas of public policy and deciding that they would take it out of the hands of the American people and instead decide for themselves, that they knew better. And I'll give you an example. So I was recently out in West Texas at a town hall, and I've done, I think, 19 town halls across the state of Texas in the last 2 weeks. And at one of the town halls, an individual asked a question. He was someone who was not a supporter of mine, and he said he was gay and he was a Democrat, but he was there to listen to what I had to say. And he asked in particular about the Obergefell case, which was the case a couple of years ago where the Supreme Court struck down the marriage laws of all 50 states and decreed that gay marriage must be allowed in every state. And this individual who was asking the question was very supportive of that position, and he asked me what I thought about it. And I said, listen, on the question of gay marriage, you and I may well disagree. I believe marriage is the union of one man and one woman. But what I also believe is that I'm a constitutionalist. I believe we should follow the Constitution. And under the Constitution, for more than 200 years, marriage has been a question for the state. It has been the state legislatures that have decided the rules of marriage. So different states have different marriage rules. So in some states, you can get married at 17, some states 16, some states 15. That has been a question that is decided by the state legislatures. And what I said to this particular activist is look, from your question, I take it that you agree with the policy decision that the Supreme Court made in that decision. So in that instance, you're happy with it. But I said, why on earth would you want to give that power to five unelected lawyers in Washington? If you want to change the marriage laws in your state, we're in Texas. If you want to change the marriage laws in Texas, there's a way to do that, which is you convince your fellow citizens that the marriage laws should change. You make the case to your neighbors, to your friends, to your family that there should be a change in the laws. And then the state legislature has full authority to change the laws and adopt the marriage laws that reflect the values of their citizens. And so I said, in this instance, you may be happy with the substantive policy decision from the court, but will you be happy tomorrow if the court has the authority, if five lawyers have the authority to decide any public policy issue they want? Will you be happy tomorrow if they reject an issue you agree with and decide the other way? And my view is, we should respect the constitutional process that leaves that decision making in the hands of the American people and allows public policy to change as people's views change. One of the virtues of that is it vindicates federalism under the 10th Amendment. One of the beauties of our Constitution is it allows 50 states to pursue 50 very different policies, and no one would expect the citizens of Pennsylvania, where you are, Monica, to adopt the exact same laws that the citizens of Texas do, or the citizens of California, the citizens of Florida. Every state is different. And the Constitution allows that difference. So if the people of California decide they want socialized medicine, they have the constitutional power to do that. They can adopt that as a matter of state law. Now, they may discover that it destroys jobs and people flee the state to go to other states where there are more jobs and more economic opportunity and there's freedom in healthcare. But the virtue of federalism is it means different states can try different policies and people can vote with their feet. If you have five unelected judges instead deciding everything for the whole country, you can't get away. You can't escape. It's instead whatever their views are govern everyone. And so the seizure of political power by the Supreme Court has resulted in Supreme Court nominations being treated as much more political. And in fact, one of the things I wrote in the wake of the gay marriage decision is this will make Supreme Court decisions much, much more political, because if they're going to behave like politicians and decide political questions, they shouldn't be surprised when people treat them like politicians and support or oppose them based simply on what public policy they happen to agree with. I don't think that's the job of a Supreme Court justice. And you asked what we can do to fix it. I think we're making major steps to fixing it in nominating and confirming strong principled constitutionalists, both on the Supreme Court and up and down the federal judiciary.
All right. We go back to the phones for one more question. This is Barbara from Morgantown, West Virginia. Barbara from Morgantown, are you on still, Barbara?
I certainly am.
Go right ahead with a question for Senator Cruz, ma'am.
Okay, thank you, Senator Cruz, for taking my question. I am concerned that the Democrats are going to continue to be obstructionists in President Trump's tenure. And I want to know if we should vote Republican to send our Democrats a message.
Barbara, thank you for that question, and let me give you a simple and unequivocal answer, yes. This election is a battleground. This November election is pivotal. And I've never seen an election that is as volatile as this election is right now. I think we could come out of the November election keeping the Republican majority in the House and growing our Republican majority in the Senate substantially. We could pick up 5 or 6 seats and come into next year instead of barely having 51 Republicans, having 54, 55, 56, which would be dramatically different. We would be able to accomplish much, much more. And Democratic obstructionism, we've seen massive, unprecedented Democratic obstructionism. And this election has the possibility to change that. On the other hand, I think it is entirely possible that Republicans lose both houses of Congress, that we come into next year with a Speaker Nancy Pelosi and a Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. And if that happens, if the Democrats take the Senate, no Supreme Court justice from Donald Trump will be confirmed for the remainder of his presidency. And I think it is likely that if Democrats take the Senate, no Court of Appeals judges will be confirmed with a Democratic majority. I think they are so radicalized and so obstructionist. If the Democrats take the House, I believe the day Nancy Pelosi is sworn into office is the day that impeachment proceedings begin against President Trump. And I think if that happens, we have 2 years of absolute political chaos, of Washington just being transformed into a partisan battle zone designed to paralyze the administration, to stop all of the pro-economic freedom, pro-job policies that are coming from the administration and coming from Congress. And so I think this race is a battleground. Look, I'll tell you, for control of the Senate, one race that matters significantly is my race in Texas. I'm up for re-election this year in Texas. Texas is already the most expensive Senate race in the country. And my opponent, a Democrat named Beto O'Rourke, is running far, far left, like Bernie Sanders. So on Brett Kavanaugh, he would vote no on Brett Kavanaugh. He would have voted no on Gorsuch. He wants, like Hillary Clinton, radical activist liberal judges on the courts. He has promised to vote to impeach Donald Trump. In fact, he's the only Democratic Senate candidate in the country who is on record explicitly supporting impeaching Donald Trump. And he has said he is open to abolishing ICE, abolishing the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. And I'll tell you, Barbara, despite being that far left, he is the number one Democratic fundraiser in the country, and he is outraising our campaign nearly 3-1. We're facing tens of millions of dollars from Hollywood liberals and liberals all over the country flooding into Texas. And so the polling right now in Texas has the race in the low single digits. We've got a battleground fight in Texas, and we're campaigning hard, but we're receiving, thankfully, the generous financial support of millions of conservatives, thousands of conservatives across Texas and across the country, and folks who are going to our website, tedcruz.org, supporting the campaign. But it's a battleground. It's a battleground in Texas. It's a battleground in your state of West Virginia. And there are a total of 10 Democrats nationally running for re-election in red states that Donald Trump carried. If we were to win all 10 of those seats, and if we were to hold on to seats like Texas, then we would come back with a 61-vote majority that the Democrats could not beat, filibuster. And I think the results in terms of cutting taxes, cutting regulations, unchaining economic growth would be transformational.
Senator Cruz, I know you've got to go in just a moment for more floor votes, but as you go, could you give us a sense of the time frame, kind of what the next steps are and when you anticipate, knowing it could change, but when you anticipate these votes on Kavanaugh going to the floor of the Senate?
Sure. So I'm in D.C. right now. The Senate is in session. As you mentioned, I'm getting ready to run to the floor and vote right now. Tomorrow, the Senate Judiciary Committee will meet. We will have the first markup on Judge Kavanaugh's nomination. Under the committee rules, the Democrats have the power to hold the nomination over for a week. So they can just delay the vote for a week. They'll do that tomorrow. So we'll meet, and then the Democrats will delay us for a week. We'll come back in a week. Next Thursday, we'll have the markup. We will vote on Judge Kavanaugh. I expect him to be voted out of committee on a straight party line vote. In other words, every Republican is going to vote yes. Every Democrat is going to vote no. Every one of the Democrats has already announced they are voting no. In fact, all of the Democrats of the committee had announced they were voting no before the hearing started. So the whole thing we saw last week was kabuki theater because they'd all announced they were voting no before we even sat down to listen to a word he had to say. next Thursday when we vote him out of committee, that will begin the process that will move him to the floor. We will see the Democrats use procedural tools to delay taking his nomination up on the floor, and they have the ability to do that for a little bit of time. I think it is likely that we will take up and vote on Brett Kavanaugh on the floor sometime in early October, and I think by early October, Judge Kavanaugh will become Justice Kavanaugh and will be confirmed to the Supreme Court.
Got it. Senator Cruz, thank you for all you're doing. I know you got to get back for votes. To all of you on the phone tonight, you heard Senator Cruz. There are just a few crucial weeks left. I mean, literally just 2 to 3 more weeks, 14 to 21 or so days for you to make a difference. If you would, go right now to www.uniteforkavanaugh.com. Unite for Kavanaugh. That's with a K. Uniteforkavanaugh.com. And you can pull up your senators online right there. You can send a message to them. It's easy. It's fast. I bet you it won't take longer than 90 seconds. Again, www.uniteforkavanaugh, K-A-V-A-N-A-U-G-H, Kavanaugh.com. And let your senators know, you heard Senator Cruz say that his colleagues listen. They watch when people both call them and email them and let them know their position on crucial issues like this. So even if you've got senators who were yes to Judge Kavanaugh, reach out anyway. Let them know you've got their back as they vote here. And for those of you in states like West Virginia we heard from, or Alaska or Indiana, really any state, make sure you're also letting your senators know. So thank you all very much. I'm Tim Phillips with Americans for Prosperity. Thanks for all you're doing with us for this nomination and on every issue to help every American improve their lives. And that's the mission of Americans for Prosperity. Thank you all and good night.